All right, welcome to the Rewired Podcast. I have Nicole Hodges with me today. I met Nicole through social media, actually, and I'm just been so curious about her journey and what she's been doing, and specifically for men. Nicole is a journalist, sexual freedom philosopher, and author, and she's also the host and creator of Men Who Take Baths, which I think launched in 2017.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a while. That intro does not encapsulate who you are or what you are. So is there anything else that you could add to that, or would you add to that, or is that suffice for now?
Well, thank you, first of all, for inviting me on to talk about my work and what I've learned. I would say that those titles kind of perfectly package, I suppose. We were kind of joking before that there's so many different directions that we can go. My work expands into work with men, into work with women. And the thing that I will say, because there's such a breadth of things that I do, maybe I'll share what the guiding principle is in all things, kind of the thread that connects it all. And that is to heal the divide. So we'll talk a bit more about Men Who Take Baths and really where that came from and how it originated. But in everything that I do, and for everything that makes it to the public sphere, you know, there are hundreds of ideas that go into something I call the ideas moat, which is just the like me batting it away and going like, not for me, go exist through somebody else. And so I think the part of the creative process is also knowing what to say no to, but the filter that I put it through is this aligned with the mission to heal the divide?
Okay. So healing the divide, would that be the divide between, humanity in general, or is this a masculine feminine specifically?
So when I think of healing the divide, I think of two things in particular. One, I think of the masculine and feminine in the sense of men and women. And then I also think of it as an internal process between masculine and feminine, darkness and light, that we all go through as a process of integration to reach wholeness within ourselves as individuals.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So as you said, a lot of ideas come and go. Some or many end up in the moat. But for this one, I mean, this has been something that you've been engaged in for, what is it, like 7 years or something now. And this seems to be a lot more people are getting involved in this now in terms of men's health and supporting men and what is masculinity in the current day. This seems like you're way ahead of the curve on this. What was the, I guess, how did that one not end up in the moat and end up being something that you've dove into?
2017 was a big year. It was 2017 that the revelations of Me Too happened, right? The allegations against Harvey Weinstein came out, and Me Too as a hashtag, as a movement, as a wake-up call for many people happened. And the idea for Men Who Take Baths actually came before Me Too. And so I was speaking to a friend, and he had mentioned that he loves taking baths, but he would never admit to that because he was afraid that he wouldn't be considered masculine. And that's something that can just easily flutter by in your life and you don't take it into consideration. I'm a big fan of taking things too far. And so it was interesting. It was that comment was made and it didn't really click fully. And then not too long afterwards, I was in a plane, and I don't know if you're familiar with the word sonder, but essentially it means this realization that everyone has a story as intricate as your own, and most of them you'll never know. And so I wasn't sure exactly what it was, but I was at that perfect altitude in the plane where you can see the rows of houses and the little cars. And I was hit with this overwhelming feeling of melancholy almost. It wasn't quite sadness. It was just this understanding there's so many stories I'll never know. And it opened up my heart. And I felt deeply connected to all things in that moment and all people. And I realize how powerful empathy is and how powerful storytelling is. And I'm a journalist and I'm a trained journalist. I've been a journalist my whole life. And so I understand storytelling. But for some reason, something clicked. And Men Who Take Baths landed in my brain with such clarity that I describe it as feeling it more like a memory of something I'd already done rather than an idea of something I had yet to do. And I turned to my seatmate, who was a friend of mine, and I said, "We're going to put men in bubble baths and we're going to interview them about masculinity and what it means to be a man." He's like, "Okay." And so I reached out to the men in my immediate circle who I thought were exemplary of what I would consider like noble masculine behavior. That didn't mean that they were men without fault. It actually meant that in their fallibility, they still persevered and were leaders in their communities, or excellent fathers and great husbands or boyfriends or whatever it was. And so I reached out to these men and I asked them if they'd like to participate in what I thought would be a one-off photography and interview project. The day before we're supposed to shoot, so it takes me, you know, 6 months to organize the first shoot. The day before we were supposed to shoot, that's when Me Too drops into the collective consciousness. And so I'm sitting with, I'm not in the tub, but I'm sitting with these men who are in the bath the next day, and they're stunned and they're looking at me and they don't know what to say. They don't know what they're allowed to say. And they don't know if they're allowed to be proud to be men anymore. That was the sentiment that I was getting from them. And I realized that something greater was at play, and that the opportunity I had was actually to begin the long process of the documentation of the evolution of masculinity and male psychology in a post Me Too world, and that it was going to be more important than ever for us not to lose the ability to speak to one another, and that Men Who Take Baths was uniquely positioned as this empathy-based project to, again, help heal the divide, because I really look at that as a fracture point. And so it evolved from just photography and written interviews into what now is, you know, a pretty full on production with video. And we just shot the fourth season. I started referring to them as seasons once I started doing video. So we just shot the fourth season in New York, and we have some really exciting partnerships coming up, and I'm launching my first bath product. And so it's, again, it's taken on this life of its own in many ways, but it's incredible to think back 7 years ago that I saw all of this already. And I feel like I'm just following the blueprint that was gifted to me.
Wow. Wow. What a great story. And you know, this, I can't help but be reminded about what we spoke about before we started recording, with your recent move to New York and showing up at an event on Halloween and seeing your book there. Like, this seems like something very similar that you're kind of creating in your life. So I think that's a wonderful process. So being on a plane and having all this come to you, and then the timing of what you call a fracture in the divide, even greater with the Me Too. I'm curious. So that 2017, and obviously, you know, you've done a lot of interviews since then, and you know, the production is increasing, and the videos and seasons, and it's wonderful. And I've had an opportunity, you know, in researching this to listen to a lot of them, there's some beautiful stories. And obviously, when a man is sitting in a bathtub, there's a inherent amount of vulnerability there already, you know, and for him to open up. I'm curious, where do you think the divide is now, today, and you know, November of 2024 versus 2017? Do you think that is healing? Do you think it's status quo? Where would you see that?
A lot of the conversations that I'm having right now in my life, and this, you know, these are both the conversations that are taking place in the bath, and then conversations that are taking place outside of that, just around dinner tables and at house parties and in different groups that I'm a part of, different social circles. Something that I'm noticing is there was once a time, and this is when Men Who Take Baths started, that there were women in my life that were asking, "Where are the good men?" And now the question is, where are the men? Not even just the good ones, but where are the men? And I think women, and I'm speaking in broad strokes, so, you know, anyone listening, please bear with me here. I know we all have different experiences, but there are many women in my life who are wondering if feminism, in many ways, actually fucked us over too. And there are conversations that are happening around, have we kind of bludgeoned men in a way into submission that we didn't want either, truly, but that we were sold this idea that we had to do everything on our own to be a modern woman. And you have women who are now in their mid-30s turning around saying, like, I was sold this girl boss, do it on your own, hyper independent package, and that I didn't need a man. And these women are really second guessing some of the choices that they've made and some of the things that they've said that they want in men or they want men to do. And I bring this up because if I were to distill all of the interviews that I've done, and between the written interviews and virtual interviews and in-person interviews over the last 7 years, I think I'm clocking in at about 100 in total. If I could distill it down into one thing, it's that masculinity is purpose-driven. So right now we have women who no longer know what they want from men, and we have men who no longer know what their purpose is. So there's a certain aimlessness that is happening amongst men. And then women are also unsure what it is that they want, but they're starting to understand that what they were told that they want is no longer what they want anymore. So there's a lack of leadership, I feel, potentially starting to emerge on both sides. Men are going, where do we belong? And women are going, where do we want to guide you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I, as I mentioned as well, before we started recording, I was with 100 men on the weekend. You know, we're talking about these types of things, and I think men are starting to come together now in these collective groups where men are doing the work. They're in a safe container where they can be vulnerable and share and, you know, realize that we're not alone. We're all kind of going through that same thing. I think going back, to the divide, then it seems, you know, I don't know if that's changed the divide, but it seems there's more confusion. I think that's, which probably is not bringing us closer to together.
Yeah. I think there's more confusion. And when there's confusion, and I think this is, if I were to make a prediction, I think what's going to happen over the next few years is there's going to be a movement towards grouping with your own gender in a way. I think that men are really going to start coming together and creating new forms of brotherhood that is not based on doing necessarily. It's not just going to be based on the sports teams that they enjoy watching together, or being, you know, brothers in arms, or you know, first responders, and that's what bonds them. I think that there's going to be a new form of brotherhood, and that is going to come through friendship in a way that men haven't actually allowed themselves to have before. So there's going to become a deepening of intimacy amongst men through the discovery of the power of friendship. And I think that
deeper friendship, I mean, more, yeah. You know, like, yeah, and where we can actually share
what we're actually feeling. Yes. Yeah. So you had mentioned, you know, men can come together in these safe spaces and they can be vulnerable. And I'm starting to see that as well. And I think that women, we have had the, you know, in many ways, the luxury and also just a form of survival to know how to create these intricate social networks where, you know, we don't, we're not necessarily defined by what we do. So much of what we do is in maintaining relationships and relationships with each other. So we have vast networks of friendships. This is something that we're very good at. And I think this is something that where women as leaders can also lead men into a deeper understanding of the value of friendships and these more casual, although the word to me sounds like wet cardboard, but platonic relationships. So that to me is where I see women actually being able to offer great value to men in this kind of collective leveling up. And then it's men as well who will learn how to hold one another through and with more intimacy and tenderness and truth. And I think that it's really important for men to have spaces that are just for men to do the capital W, you know, the work.
Yeah. So fascinating. And you have a really great, you know, you're very close to this with your work and, you know, just a very intuitive in general with men and trends and what's happening. I'm just curious, with all of the men that you've interviewed, has anything come up, I guess, like a common thread with all these men that you find surprising or something that you didn't see?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind, and I've mentioned this one before, so I'll mention this one and then I'll introduce a new one, just in case there's someone who hasn't heard me speak of this one. But that first group of men that I mentioned that I reached out to in my immediate circle, I realized something only after the fact when I was transcribing all of the interviews, I found a common thread. And that thread is that all of these men grew up without a father. So all of these men who I chose for their, I don't know, high degree of respect for women, let's call it as one of the main kind of touch points, they all grew up without a father. And that broke my heart because I thought to myself, does the father have to be removed from this scenario? And does a man have to be raised by a mother to see the strength of the mother in order to respect women? So that was something that was really surprising to me. And that one caused the integration of one of my new questions, which was, you know, how can we raise boys into men who respect women? The other thing that I find surprising, and this has come up now as more time has passed, really is just that men seem to collectively agree that there is a severe lack of male role models. And they don't have the answer to who those role models should be. They just know that there's a lack of role models. And so part of how I describe Men Who Take Baths is that I'm building a roster of positive male role models that kind of moves beyond maybe the like idealized version of man as, let's say, like athlete, for instance, as like a stand-in archetype, and actually shows men as, you know, I use the word fallible, as humans. And so that's part of what I'm wanting to build up with this project is, okay, well, here, like, come and listen to these men, right? And what is a role model if not somebody who through their own lived experience can speak to that, and you have the opportunity to gain wisdom from it. They're not telling you what to do. They're simply living in a way where you go, oh, that's, I see in that person something that I'm perhaps yet to discover within myself, but now I know is possible.
And so for the first one with the father being raised by the mom, would that be the father's physically absent, or the father might be there, but he's just not present or not involved or maybe abusive? Was it
it was a combination of just dad is not in the picture whatsoever. You know, relationship with father didn't actually happen until they were already in adulthood, or it was what they would describe as an absentee dad. So physically present, but emotionally not available.
The role model one's interesting, because when you say that, I'm just thinking, you know, who are my role models, you know, and there are a few. And interestingly, when, you know, I first started to really go deep within this, my own healing journey and all the things I've been doing and excavating from my past, I took a much softer approach to role models at one point, almost shying away from what would be considered a masculine type man at that point, just because I was almost feeling shameful of being so overly masculine to a certain point in my life. Do you see there being more of these role models emerging now in our culture?
Ooh, that's a great question. I feel like that question to me, it there's almost a falseness that rises up in my chest. There's like a stopper, like a gentle hand in a way that prevents me from answering in any other way. But honestly, and the honest answer to that is, I don't know. I think that men would have to be the one to answer that question, because as close as I can get to the male experience, I'm still not a man. And so empathy can create this bridge, but I still can't get inside of your head. And I don't know exactly what it's like to move through the world as a man. And so I don't know what the new role model might look like for you, but I can, from my perspective, share something that might, if you are a listener, it might help you at least start to think about what a role model might be, or at least provide some sort of lens. So that's how I can add some value to the answer to this question from an honest place. I didn't realize that I was essentially playing into part of the myth of Odysseus until a war veteran reached out to me and said that he was a fan of Men Who Take Baths. And he said, "Do you realize that you are Circe?" And I was like, "No, tell me more." Oh, wow. And so he shared with me a beautiful part of the myth, specifically around Jungian psychology and the immersion into water. So when Odysseus is returning from the Trojan War with his men, they land on the island of Circe, and she's, you know, we'll just call her like a goddess archetype, and she turns all of his men into swine. And the reason for this is that they've lost their humanity. So what she's doing is she's essentially turning them into pigs so that they can see themselves in all that they've become, returning from war. And she takes Odysseus and she leads him and she puts him in a bath, right? And she bathes him. And the immersion into the water and in the bath is this, like, this womb essentially is a return to the womb and an immersion into the subconscious. For Odysseus in particular, the immersion into the subconscious was to rescue the feminine elements of himself that had to be repressed in order to go to war, in order to be in battle. And so when she bathes him and he emerges, he's reclaimed this feminine aspect of himself and emerged from the bath more complete, with a sense of wholeness. So we were talking earlier about healing the divide also being that integration between the masculine and the feminine within our own selves as individuals. So this individuation process of integrating both sides of oneself is essentially what happens when Circe bathes Odysseus. Then he returns to his men with both an understanding or at least a relationship with the masculine and the feminine aspects of himself. And when he returns, his men see him and they see themselves in him and they return to their human form. And so perhaps that myth is part of what can create at least a new, what would I even call it? A new way of seeking role models. Are these people that embody both the feminine and the masculine aspects of themselves?
Interesting. Yeah, that's cool. And having the audience engage with you like that to bring you these things is a beautiful kind of collaboration or co-creation. Does your audience, well, I guess I'm curious before I ask that question, but is it gender-wise? Is it a mixed audience that you that watch the show?
It's so funny. So there's so many women that watch the show. And the amount of men who come through and say, you know, my girlfriend or my wife was like, you absolutely have to watch this. It's really funny. Lots of women watch, and lovely men have reached out too, going, I'm really confused about what your target audience is because I'm not really sure that men want to watch other men bathe. And I was like, that's okay. It's an audio format too.
Yeah.
But one of the products that we have coming out is a bath bomb for couples. So I have something called a tubble. Okay. I'm trying to reframe bath bomb. So I've called them tubbles, okay. which is a mix between tub and bubble. And the proprietary element of the tubble is that it dissolves and there's a question on the inside. So you're meant to sit in the bath. You know, there's one designed specifically for men. So you'll sit in the bath, the question will pop to the top and it'll be about masculinity and, you know, you're meant to kind of sit there and be in an introspective state. And then I was like, but most of my audience is women. So if men are coming to me through the women in their lives, and I've got to create a tubble for couples so the woman can, you know, drop it in and be like, babe,
yeah,
have a chat. So the question pops to the top and it's meant to, you know, create a bonding experience between whoever's in the bath, which could be two men. It could be a man, a woman, and many people, however many people you bathe with, there's a tubble for you.
Right. I love that. Yeah. So for ideas, I guess, in terms of your questions and themes, does that some of that come from the audience then as well?
Sometimes. So what's really important for me, I mentioned, you know, this is kind of the documentation of the evolution of masculinity, the male psychology is I really like to keep questions the same year over year. Because that shows that you can ask the same question to multiple people and get wildly different answers. It also really helps me track some of the changes of how questions are answered over time. And I really like to say that, you know, why a question needs to be asked is often just as important as the answer given. And so I try to also introduce year over year, some new questions that are reflective of the time. And some of those questions come through the audience. You know, sometimes I'll put a call out and I'll ask, you know, what would you love to hear from these men? But one of the things that I've done quite recently is I actually asked the men of the previous season to provide a question for the men of the next season. Which again is really, this project is, it's for women and it's also so much for the man who's in the bath. Like it's really his bath, his experience, and to be able to say to him like what do you've been here, you know what this is like, you know, what do you want to pass on? What is the question, this like golden coin, this gold coin that you can hand to me that I can put in my pocket that on behalf of you, I can carry forward.
Is there a common theme with that particular practice?
So there were actually a surprising number of questions that were based around the man's experience with his sexuality over his life. And I think in many ways, this is still coming from Me Too, where the thing that men were most afraid of was, oh my God, like, has my sexuality and maybe sometimes my not so perfect expression of it, or how I've engaged with it, or how I've used women, or how I wasn't in touch with myself and my power and maybe made some mistakes or have done some things that I'm not proud of or said things or whatever. That was where so much of the fear came from. Now, obviously, like, Me Too was, you know, based on, you know, sexual assault and rape. And so of course that really entered into the collective consciousness, but even now, right, that was one of the main things, was like, how has your relationship with your sexuality changed over time? And for you, you know, what's the difference between intimacy and, you know, having sex with somebody? And can you have sex without intimacy? And how does that make you feel? And what is a misconception around male sexuality that you want people to know? Or how has projections around how you're supposed to behave sexually actually changed the way that you perform sexuality or perform masculinity? And so that's what I found to be really fascinating, because I just haven't, not publicly have I gone there. I host, you know, after each season, I host a party, and you know, there's a men's group that takes place at the party where the men will be in the center and they will have a discussion, and the women will hold a circle holding hands around the circle of men, just holding space and listening in. And that's when sexuality will come up a lot. But this was really interesting to me that was actually something that the men wanted to have discussed publicly.
Yeah. I think there's just a lot of, you know, the fear, shame, and guilt trap. And I know for myself, that's been something I have to be very aware of to keep me out of that lower vibration. But intimacy is something that men don't talk about very often, and something that we certainly all crave. And we know about the animalistic sex and a lot of the way we, you know, just the way the culture's been for men. But yeah, intimacy is such a, it's kind of a taboo thing. I even in the groups that I talk with now, we're getting deep into healing and things, but intimacy is still something that seems to be left out. And I know that we all crave and long for that.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm teasing out, you know, you just have so many books, you know, you need to write. I don't know if you run into this issue, but I just have more and more books that are like stuck inside of me. And I'm like, Nicole, you need to finish your next one before you can go to the one after that. But something that's starting to percolate for me is really something around friendship. And actually a question that I have, or a curiosity that I have, that I'm starting to tease out and explore, is whether or not, or whether polyamory is in many ways an opportunity for men to experience more intimacy in their lives, but it's still being done kind of under the guise of a sexual relationship. But what it really is an opportunity for men to actually experience more intimacy. Because it was really, where are you going to get it? You get it from your partner, right? And I don't know where else. And again, this comes back to what we were kind of talking about. Yeah. What can women teach men? And what we can teach men is casual intimacy. Because we have those friendships. We have access to that. Women, for the most part, are kind of in love with all of their friends. And we love to take each other on dates. And we're fine being naked with each other. And we'll kiss and we'll touch and we'll cuddle. And it's not a big deal. So we have that. Men, as far as I know, don't have access to such casual intimacy. And so that's part of what I'm wondering is that why, or is that contributing to this uptick in polyamorous behavior, or polyamory as a relationship structure, because it is access to more casual intimacy for men?
I would guess it is. Yes, I would guess. Great. It is. Okay. Yes, we do not have, the same opportunity with intimacy within our same sex friendships for the most part. There's so many places I could go from there. And when we spoke initially, I'm like, we better just pick one thing because there's only so much time, but I would love to deep dive with you on that another time. But so what, in terms of your mission, Nicole, and I mean, I just want to acknowledge you for everything that you're doing to raise awareness with men to, it's just, you know, I've really enjoyed, again, like watching your shows and preparing for this. Like what's next for your mission? Is it more of what you've described? Is there something else that's on the horizon?
Oh, well, thank you for that acknowledgement. That means a lot to me. I feel that, you know, when I hear something like that, it's in so many ways permission to continue, you know, and I'll have people in my life say, you don't need permission, but there's still something about that acknowledgement that always feels like, okay, I'm doing right by the people, you know? So thank you. And in terms of what's next, I mean, Men Who Take Baths has been slowly growing for 7 years. And I think there's a certain degree of mastery that I have over it. And just that my heart has been so in it for so long that I'm really ready to ask for more. I'm ready for it to reach more people. And I think my transition into New York is part of that commitment to this project, to let it really start to just like be what it can be. And so that's part of what's next. And then on the other side of things, I'm writing a book. And so I'll be going into hibernation mode for January and February for the most part, to really focus on it. But the book explores whether or not BDSM, I don't want to downplay the audience, but for anybody who doesn't know what that is, I will still say it's bondage and discipline, dominance and submission, sadism and masochism. So I'm exploring whether these, I don't know, erotic practices, I suppose I'll call them, could ever be considered a form of therapy. So that's another realm that I've been exploring for about 7 years. And so it's like, it's more of the same, but it's the next level of what that is.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. Well, thank you so much for sharing all that. And thank you for what you're doing to help heal this divide. Mm-hmm. And I'm super excited to see what's coming next.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nicole.